Hi, everyone. I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn, and welcome to the Times of Israel podcast. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a big nerd, and I found it really fascinating to look at all the bulletins documenting the places where those infected with the coronavirus have gone. Here in Israel, it was actually discovered that the main hotspot for contagion is the synagogue. But even before that discovery, many religiously observant Jews started taking to online prayer forums. Also, a group of Sephardi rabbis made Zoom Passover Seders permissible. First rice and now this. To make Seder of what is kosher, I speak with Rabbi Avi Pupko about the very deep and historically Jewish need for prayer quorums. They're usually made up of 10 men. So how can technology fill the gap now that the Israeli Health Ministry has put out an order stopping all gatherings of more than two individuals? But first, we'll discover how high tech really can help those at highest risk during the coronavirus crisis, the elderly. Haifa University's Dr. Michal Isaacson is an expert in gerontology. She explains that actually the biggest risk to these older adults is not the disease, but social isolation and its associated loneliness. She's a really good friend of mine, and she gave me some tips that will help me stay connected with my 95-year-old grandma in Indianapolis, and hopefully they'll help you out too. So I'm sitting here with my good friend, Michal Isaacson. And Michal, first of all, tell me what your expertise is in.
So I'm a faculty member at the gerontology department at Haifa University. My PhD is actually in urban geography. I'm an urban geographer, and I study environmental gerontology. And that's how the environment is a silent partner in among aging people and aging population. And that type of research, I mostly study urban environments and how older adults use urban environments. And another focus of my research is on gerontology, which is the use of technology among older adults.
Okay, great. So that's what we're going to be focusing more on today. Can you tell me a little bit, first of all, what kind of challenges could our older adults be facing right now during this coronavirus crisis, and how specifically could technology actually help them out?
So one of the things that we're seeing more and more of, and it's something that we're concerned about in regular times as well, is social isolation and loneliness, which are two different terms that are associated. They're connected, but they're not the same. Social isolation is the amount of social connections that you have, or the quality of social connections that you have, or the intensity of the social connections that you have. It could be measured in different ways. While loneliness is a deep, unpleasant emotional feeling that people have when they feel that they don't have anybody to share their emotions with, their feelings with, the important things that are happening to them. It happens when people feel that their expectation for connection and for companionship is not met. So what we're seeing now is a growth in social isolation. Older adults, as we know, are more can be affected by the virus in a more morbid manner than younger adults. So they are self-isolating themselves in their homes. They're being asked to limit their connection with other people. And when we have these people sitting at home, it can lead to social isolation very quickly.
Okay. I see, for example, with my mother-in-law, she's 82 and she's been under lockdown, actually, in a Jerusalem assisted living facility for the past almost 3 weeks. Now, she is telling me that her phone is ringing off the hook and she's using the WhatsApp like never before. So it seems to me that she would not be suffering from social isolation in this case. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. It sounds, and I've met your mother-in-law. Uh-huh. She's a lovely woman, and she has a lovely family that's that cares for her. So I think that having family and grandchildren that are around and are involved is important. In Israel, we're used to having very close connections. So she's used to seeing her family on a, I don't know, weekly, daily basis, very frequently.
Several times a week, for sure.
So she's usually really embraced by them. And I'm imagining that for people like her, technology and communication using WhatsApp and Zoom is being communication is being placed by applications like WhatsApp and Zoom.
Okay, so let's take, for instance, my grandmother, who's almost 95. She can't really see. She can't really hear at all. Her only communication with the world is basically through my father, who's not supposed to see her anymore. So how could technology perhaps help her?
Well, not being able to see and hear is going to be a big challenge.
It is.
It's unfortunate that she's in a situation like that, but it's not very unique. There are many people in their 90s, say what we call the oldest old, that are in very isolated, and not being able to hear is a big issue. People have hearing aids and technology that helps them hear that is not related to this crisis, but connecting them to online services can be just a little bit more challenging.
Okay.
People that can read can use text messages and WhatsApp in places where WhatsApp is used widely, like Israel.
Okay, so what are some broad measures that could be useful for our older adults?
Okay, so I think that what we have to remember is that there's something very interesting, and that is that loneliness, which is what we're really afraid of, we have to remember that loneliness can kill. So this virus is very dangerous and deadly, but loneliness can be just as deadly, and we have to make sure, we have to keep on thinking about people that are living alone within our communities, and older adults tend to be a large majority of those people, that are losing connections just because they can't even leave their homes to go to the supermarket. The day-to-day connections, social environments that they usually participate in aren't happening right now. One of the interesting things about loneliness is that while in younger cohorts, loneliness is not associated with social isolation. You can be lonely in a crowd, right?
Okay,
we have a saying like that.
For sure.
You can be very lonely with a lot of people around you.
Yep.
So technology doesn't usually help younger adults feel not lonely. It actually could make them feel even lonelier, right? We know when people use Facebook.
Sure, or seeing crowds of kids looking at their phone when they're all together.
Exactly. Yeah. It can make people feel lonely. Or the feeling that everybody is out there having a great time and I'm sitting home alone can make people feel very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
So for younger cohorts, technology has to be used wisely and is a lot more complex.
But for the older people?
So for older people, loneliness is actually associated with social isolation. And using technology, especially now during this COVID-19 crisis, we can reach out to people and create more social connection and more feeling of community and of connection, and hopefully ward off some of the loneliness.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, there are two things we're talking about here. Social isolation, which is the physical state of not being with other people, versus loneliness, which is the subjective internal state. With young people, it could be that they're in a crowd but feel lonely. But with older people, just naturally, they're already with fewer people for the most part. And now, all the more so when they're either self-isolating themselves or under quarantine or lockdown, like my mother-in-law, the loneliness could be more of a factor. And so technology in this case could come and be some kind of a proxy for personal interaction.
Yes. And we're seeing people use technology more and more. We're seeing a lot of Zoom use.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom has been a very useful technology to connect communities, not only one-to-one connection, which text messages and video chats are good for, but Zoom creates community.
But so, is it intuitive enough for the older adults? I mean, I know in our house, it was our 14-year-old who had to explain it to his father.
So that's actually a good question. Many people are successful in using Zoom, and it's kind of interesting to see what motivation does to help people using Zoom, because people that have not been motivated to even look at Zoom or other technologies like that have installed and used the technologies very successfully recently. There are a few companies that have services that are targeted at older adults. In Israel here, we have a wonderful company called Uniper Care Technology.
What do they do?
They have two types of services. The traditional service is a box that connects to a television and basically gives community services online. It lets people that are homebound or mostly homebound connect to communities that they live within. And their other service is a web-based service that you can use on any computer, and it does something very similar to Zoom with some internal programming and groups, but it's a lot simpler to use. So for people that might be challenged in using downloading Zoom and getting it set up, that's an option.
Okay. Do you know of anything else?
So I think another good option is for us to help the people within our communities. And I've been doing a lot of that in the last few days. Just from a technology perspective, a good way to do it is to download TeamViewer, which is a technology that lets you use somebody's computer from far, a remote desktop application. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's very easy to install. So you have the older adults, you email a link to TeamViewer, they download TeamViewer, and you log into the computer and set them up from far. That's been very successful.
Oh, very cool. So if your older adult is having trouble installing, for example, Zoom, you can take over the computer and do it for this person.
Yes.
Great. What else you got for us?
Yeah, I know. I think that smartphone usage is becoming has become more prevalent in the past few years. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that we know about older adults is that they use very few functions within their smartphones. So people that have had smartphones before this crisis are using more and more of their functions. Mm-hmm. The video is working more. They're able to enter different types of chats. And that's also been very useful. But if you don't have a smartphone, this might not be the time to go out and get one.
Okay. Wow. Thanks so much, Michal. I really appreciate your advice.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Now I'm speaking with Rabbi Avi Pupko, who is currently the Rosh Beit Midrash at Mechinat Ein Prat, which is a pre-military leadership academy for all types of high school graduates from across Israel. If a secular woman such as myself can have a rabbi, he's mine. Avi previously served as the campus rabbi at the Harvard University Hillel and as a community rabbi in Boston's North Shore. He has what is known as yichus and comes from a widely known rabbinical dynasty and is well grounded in all the sources. He studied in the top Orthodox yeshivas and has already collected two rabbinical ordinations from big name rabbis. Avi and I sat outside my house, more than 2 meters apart, but you'll hear a guest appearance by one of my dogs. Her name is Kremish. Hi, Avi.
Hello, Amanda.
So we're here to talk about some of the technological advances that are helping people during the coronavirus crisis actually maintain a prayerful life. First of all, can you tell me what have you seen?
I've seen everything from discussions about having the largest virtual Seder ever with 30,000 people connecting on one Zoom account. I'm pretty sure Zoom doesn't allow for that, but I've seen people talking about that. And everything to just a communal prayer gathering over Zoom on a street.
So what is the prayer gathering to begin with? What is it in terms of Jewish law, halakha?
Okay, so as far as kind of the meta view of what's going on, the coronavirus presents a unique challenge for Jewish communities throughout the world of whatever denomination, because it is deep in the Jewish DNA to gather together. It's something that we've been doing for a very, very long time. A prayer quorum or a minyan of having 10 Jewish adults gathering together is a rabbinic idea from the post-temple period, the first and second century. However, the idea of gathering together is a very old idea. We know that synagogues existed even in the late Second Temple period, and even probably from the second century BCE, there's already synagogues in Israel. But of course, the idea of the entire people gathering together is central to biblical Judaism, of coming together in Jerusalem 3 times a year. Then you have once every 7 years of a gathering together. So not as frequently as a thrice daily minyan or prayer quorum is, but the idea of gathering together is central. We meet God and we experience God as a community, as a critical mass of people. The Jewish revelation, unique as opposed to the Christian or Muslim revelation, is one that happens as the entire people gather together at Sinai, as opposed to an individual revelation to Jesus or to Muhammad. Ours is one of the people together. So the idea of social distancing, it's hard to think of a practice which is counter to the very, so counter to the basic DNA of the Jewish instinct to gather together. So it presents a unique challenge.
So you're talking about packages of 10 Jewish adults, you're calling them, but in practice, in an Orthodox setting, at least it should be 10 men.
Right, correct? In an Orthodox setting, it would be 10 men. In more liberal denominations, it would be 10 Jewish adults over the age of Bar Mitzvah.
But the Jewish law actually discusses, if I'm not mistaken, several instances in which they're missing perhaps a person or two, and right. There are things that can be done.
Absolutely. So even in Tractate Brachot, which is where the Jewish legal mechanism about a minyan is laid out, a minyan actually is not so clear-cut what makes it. And the reason is because most people like to talk about it in very black and white terms, 10 Jewish adults, men, gather together. It's not that simple. Like I said, even in the rabbinic discussions about it in Tractate Brachot, it's understood that we're looking not necessarily for 10 Jewish adults, but what we're looking for, and this is the key issue when we talk about what's going on right now, for a feeling that a critical mass of Jews have gathered together to praise God.
Okay, and what does it mean to gather together? Right. Is there any kind of spatial establishment?
There's a lot of discussion, like anything in Jewish law. There's all sorts of going down into details and many disagreements. What you could say that there's an absolute consensus about is you need to feel that. You need to feel that we have gathered together to perform a certain religious duty, whether it be praise God or read from the Torah. There's discussions in Tractate Brachot. Maybe you need 9. What about if you're in one room and everyone's scattered in different corners and there's less of a feeling of gathering together? So you may technically have in one room 10 people, but do you really have that feeling? And then there's discussions of maybe if you have 8 people, there's an opinion, or maybe 9 people, and then you add someone who's almost bar mitzvah. Maybe there's even an idea in the Talmud that you could count the ark, which holds the Torah scrolls, as being part of the minyan. And the reason why there's all this gray area, because it is something that's subjective. In other words, how you feel that sense of gathering is not necessarily something that's black and white. So there's a lot of room to play with.
So it has something to do with a number. That's my little poodle. Has something to do with a number, but also the intention of the gathering.
The intention of the gathering, and I would say also the intensity of the gathering, or the kavanah, the intentionality mm-hmm. of the gathering.
The feeling of being gathered as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so where does Zoom minyan okay. pop
so,
in there?
So that's where, given that kind of brief introduction about what a prayer quorum is about, what a minyan is about, it's obvious that Zoom, on the one hand, presents opportunities if in an age of social distancing, but on the other hand, it really doesn't, if you ask my humble rabbinic opinion.
And we are.
It doesn't really provide the full response of what a prayer quorum is. Before I get into the Zoom, let me just share one other. There's a halacha, a Jewish law, that dates back to the Talmudic period, that if you are alone, in other words, for whatever reason, you can't go to synagogue. There's a synagogue in your community, but you're not feeling well, and you're unable to attend. There's a very old, the 2-millennia-old idea that what you should try and do, you can pray in your home, but try and schedule your prayer to the same time as the prayer in the synagogue. Mm-hmm. So you already have this 2-millennia-old idea of virtual prayer, mm-hmm. where you're at home. Mm-hmm. You know that there's other people praying at the same time. You're not with them in the actual space, but you're connecting
spiritually
uh-huh. By virtue of the fact that you live in the same community. My community prays at 9 in the morning. I'm also going to pray at 9 in the morning. I'm not with them, but I know that's going on. Mm-hmm. I intend to be connected with them, and that it's not exactly like praying with a minyan, but it's pretty close.
Okay. So why would Zoom not be
okay,
in
so,
this line?
So yeah. there's almost across the board rabbinic consensus that if there is a minyan, an actual physical minyan happening somewhere, and someone zooms in to watch that minyan take place, that is almost, that's even more than the rabbinic idea, than the Talmudic idea of scheduling your prayer time at home at the same time as the synagogue. You're viewing them. Mm-hmm. You're seeing them. So you know there's Jews have gathered together, and I'm participating in it from afar. Mm-hmm. But you feel the vibe
right.
of the minyan. Because
but
you
now
see it
nobody
place.
Is meant to be actually together in the same physical
right.
space.
Okay, so for instance, here in Kfar, here in our community, in Kfar Dumim, there is a minyan that takes place for those who are in mourning and saying the Kaddish. So they go to the basketball court. They keep a very, very far distance from between each other. And then whoever wants to zoom in to view that minyan, pray along with them, they can do that. So that works. There's no question about
it. So already there are 10 men who are gathered together on the basketball court, keeping 2 meters apart, definitely. And there's some kind of a computer set up to film it. And you can zoom in and join spiritually into this particular minyan. So this is an editor's note. A few hours after this conversation took place, the health ministry finally decided that those communal prayer quorums that Avi was talking about at the basketball court could no longer take place. Rather, anyone who wants to zoom into a minyan because of saying the mourner's prayer or whatever reason may only do so from the one officially authorized minyan in the country, which takes place 3 times a day at the Western Wall. I checked with Avi and he confirmed that his remarks about the basketball court minyan are relevant to this minyan as well. So that would count in terms of
that minyan. I think without a doubt that works. Again, you already have the Talmudic precedent of somebody praying at home, scheduling it at the same time that they're praying in the synagogue. The complicated issue, let's say a minyan which is formed exclusively on Zoom.
Right. People who are in their own homes who are zooming in. While you may see, a selection of them on the screen, can this actually be considered a gathering?
Right. Okay. So there's rabbis who are saying that can work. Mm-hmm. I'm more skeptical about it, not because I'm conservative in my approach to Jewish law. In general, I'm okay with saying, okay, this is a change that makes sense. It doesn't really cut it. In other words, and that's okay that it doesn't cut it. The reason why it doesn't cut it, because it's possible that this will change in 10 years. And people are talking about the coronavirus speeding up human consciousness as far as everything that's done remotely.
Okay.
So this may be different in 5 to 10 years. The overwhelming majority of human beings do not experience a virtual meeting in the same way that they experience a physical meeting. Do they experience it as a kind of a meeting? Absolutely. But it's not to the same extent. It doesn't have the same power, whether it be a work meeting, whether it be an online class where you're in the same room with the professor, and how much more so with a prayer gathering that is supposed to be spiritually powerful, because you look around the room and you see people gathered together. Zoom, so the Zoom, it just doesn't cut it. I'm not saying that it's not worth it, but I do think, and this is, I think, the more crucial point, the more interesting point, as far as what all of humanity is experiencing right now, as we are in the throes of this virus, and that is, this virus presents us opportunities. It presents us opportunities to experiment with technological opportunities, to explore different technological avenues of performing religious rituals. But it also gives us an opportunity, especially for Jews or of any religion who are very careful about going to Jewish prayer or Catholic Mass on a regular basis, and they're used to that experience, to, as opposed to trying to replace that with something that, in my personal opinion, doesn't quite cut it, to experience really praying on your own at home, which for some people is not an experience that they're used to. And I think that what rabbis should be encouraging, or religious leaders should be encouraging their flock, for lack of a better term, to engage in, is exactly that, is not trying to create a Band-Aid solution for the very difficult challenges the virus is presenting us, but rather to use this as an opportunity to work on religious muscles that we're not used to using, that we're not used to putting into.
It's interesting you're talking about this. Like, I'm not one who actually prays, but I have two things. One thing, I always found it really bizarre to be in a minyan where you're trying to have your own personal intention within a crowd of other people mumbling along, which I always found incredibly distracting. So the praying alone, maybe I could be up for that. Sure. But what you're talking about reminds me of my yoga classes. You know, unfortunately, they've been, disbanded, of course. And so now I'm trying to practice yoga on my own. And I hear my teacher's voice in my head, but at the same time, I'm saying, how exactly does she do this? Wow, I really need to figure this out for myself at the same time. So I hear what you're saying. It is startling in a way, though, for me to hear that you, Avi, who is somebody who is quite progressive and willing to experiment, that you're not 100% behind this idea of a Zoom minyan at this point. But it sounds like it's a very subjective objection.
Yeah, it's absolutely subjective, because what a minion means is subjective. As far as that you're surprised by my kind of conservative approach to this issue, I think that what smart progressive rabbis or wise progressive rabbis should do is not just at every given opportunity to grab up a leniency or a new opportunity, but rather it's a clear-eyed view of what's going on in the world, eyes wide open, saying this is what's going on, taking everything into account and saying, okay, this makes sense or it doesn't make sense. I think, yeah, like you said, praying in a minion presents its own challenges, like mm-hmm. you said. Prayer is a very, which is the other reason why attempting to create a minion over Zoom is problematic, because as we all know, the internet connection can get weak and all of a sudden the audio goes out. And that's the opposite of what somebody should be thinking about when they're praying. You should be doing everything to focus on one thing, and that is God. And when you're thinking about grabbing the Ethernet cable from your closet, it's probably not the best thing to be thinking about while you are praying.
Now, all these efforts, these Zoom efforts, etc., are not for days such as Shabbat or holidays, or are they? Okay. What is Passover? Is
right.
Passover not kind of a Shabbat-like holiday where you're not meant to be doing yeah. certain things?
Absolutely. So there was the Zoom minion conversation was a hot topic kind of 2 weeks ago. We've kind of moved on from that. Whatever decision you made that decision. And now everyone's talking about these seders over Zooms. As probably many of our listeners are aware, that there's been at least 120-year-old taboo in Orthodox Judaism against using electricity, definitely on Shabbat and also on holidays like Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and Rosh Hashanah for that matter. We don't touch phones, we don't obviously use computers, and don't use electrical appliances unless we put them on a timer beforehand, and so on and so forth. Not to get too much into the weeds of the halachic discussions about holidays, but the Torah, the Bible, already makes a very important exception for holidays like Passover, that you can use fire to cook on the holidays. Holidays are supposed to be a little bit more chill and a little bit more fun than the Sabbath, which, not that the Sabbath is, God forbid, somber, but the Sabbath is supposed to be more of a serious day than the holidays. Holidays are supposed to be a celebration. Homo sapiens for millennia, if not more than that, when we celebrate, we celebrate in one central way, and that is grilling.
Yes,
barbecue.
Yeah.
It's in almost every culture in the world. It's in Israel, it's in the United States. On Israel's Independence Day, we barbecue. On American Independence Day, we barbecue. And seriously, that's why the Torah allows people to use fire on the holidays, is to barbecue.
Pre-lit fire.
A pre-lit fire, but even that's a little bit, but uh-huh. yeah, generally speaking, we see not to make a
from
new
a
fire,
flame that was
but have an existing
lit.
Flame, but you can use mm-hmm. the flame, which is why for almost a century now, there's been very intense rabbinic discussions about using electricity on holidays, again, not on Shabbat, mm-hmm. but on holidays, which is why some rabbis, there was a group of Moroccan rabbis that made a lot of noise last week when they came out with a halachic ruling which would allow people to Zoom in their grandparents or anybody else who's alone, because either they're in quarantine or because of just general rules of social distancing, and Zoom them into a Passover Seder. And this, in turn, provoked other very heated rabbinic ideas. God forbid, absolutely not. You're not allowed using a computer on the Sabbath and the holidays. So here's the deal. You want to hear what I think about it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Rabbi Herschel Schechter, who is he's the Rosh Hashiv of YU. He's in the United States. He's considered the respected rabbinic voice even in the most ultra orthodox circles on matters of Jewish law. He's a genius. And he is the preeminent halachic scholar in the United States today. He wrote a ruling that he didn't want to be publicized, but now
that's
a little bit too late. No, everyone's already been talking about it. That if you know of an elderly person, or really anybody who is suffering from severe depression mm-hmm. Because of what's going on, because they're alone in the Passover Seder, of course you can Zoom them in, because someone is suffering from depression. So like even on the Sabbath, we would allow, we not only allow, you must take into account people's health, and their mental health included, so that you could zoom them in. But the Moroccan rabbis from different places in Israel, they made a much more, so that ruling exists, but that's only in extreme circumstances. They made a much more across the board ruling that anybody can zoom in anybody on a Passover Seder, because electricity is not really, it's not really a, such a big deal to use electricity on the holidays for the reasons that we explained about the barbecuing. I think, like, kind of similar to what I was saying about the minion, is that I also posted something about this on the on Facebook, and that is that this, when the Torah describes a Passover Seder, it describes it actually in a very intimate fashion. In fact, the Passover Seder is supposed to be, I know this might be surprising to some of our listeners, it's supposed to be actually the most intimate Jewish ritual that there is. As opposed to on the on Yom Kippur, for example, or Rosh Hashanah, where we all run in droves to the synagogue, Passover Seder doesn't happen in synagogue. It doesn't happen in the community. It happens at home. And that dates back already to the first Passover in Egypt, which we all know from either the movies, Prince of Egypt, or Ten Commandments, or from reading the Bible. It happens at home. The home is supposed to be an intimate setting. Families, especially in Israel, are very large. And Passover Seder has turned into Thanksgiving. It's not... It's not that it's okay if it's Thanksgiving. It's okay if you mesh Passover Seder with a family reunion. But at its core, it's supposed to be, as the Torah says, "Vihigadata levincha," and you should teach your child, a parent with their child, asking and telling this beautiful ancient story about how people were in slavery and went into freedom and became free overnight. It's an amazing story, and the Torah, Judaism, understands that that story is best told in the intimate setting, parent and child. So my personal opinion is, if there are elderly people or cousins or nephews and nieces who are alone, and you know that it would be very, very difficult for them to experience a Passover Seder alone, then absolutely you can zoom them in. You want to be strict about it. You set it up beforehand. Although the idea that you're going to keep the Zoom on, and there's not going to be issues in the course of the Passover Seder, if you don't pay $15 a month to Zoom, you only have a limit of 40 minutes. As we all know, most Passover Seders, maybe for, oh, great, we got to get.
We may wish.
Right. This is a perfect opportunity. Let's do a Passover Seder in 40 minutes. Let's get it all over, and then we can eat really quickly. Everybody's saying, when do we eat? But so let's say you pay for the Zoom account, and you know people, it would be very difficult for them. It's probably okay. But I would encourage our listeners to really be grateful, ironically, for this unique opportunity that it forces people, for better or for worse, I'm trying to say perhaps for the better, to have a Passover Seder at home. If you have kids, then how much more so? This is an amazing gift to have a small, intimate Seder, just parents and children, and discussing this incredible story. And if you're alone, if you are alone, it's difficult. It won't be easy, but it also presents its unique opportunities as far as contemplating and performing the rituals with yourself without the noise of a large family around you.
Well, may we all have eggs to celebrate Passover, as well as the patience to be alone with our own families and teach our own children, etc. One last question.
Sure.
Okay. When, God willing, the coronavirus crisis is over, how much of these innovations do you think will be carried forward, if any? And do you think anyone really has the comfortable gravitas to make these rulings stick?
Okay, so for sure, it will change. These changes will be with us forever. You can't turn the clock back. People will use mediums like Zoom and other softwares to connect virtually, not on the Sabbath, not on holidays, but it will be something that will be more and more used. Classes, Torah classes, rabbis will realize, why do I have to get dressed at 10 o'clock at night to go out to teach a class? I can sit in my underwear from the comfort of my living room and teach a class. I think teachers and rabbis will definitely see the benefits of that. Although it's hard to teach a class when you're not seeing the people that are sitting around you in the room. So for sure, these changes are with us for good. They're not going to go away. And I think that's an okay thing, because I think that in general, Jewish tradition has been around long enough that we know how to internalize changes and to integrate changes into our way of life without it making these dramatic changes. I think people who are in the year of mourning and they're not feeling up to going to synagogue, so zooming into an existing minyan will be with us forever. That will become mm-hmm. the norm mm-hmm. in synagogues. Absolutely. As far as there is a rabbinic voice with enough gravitas, absolutely. Like Rav Herschel Schechter, someone like that in the United States, there are definitely very respected ultra-Orthodox voices here in Israel and modern Orthodox voices here in Israel. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, for example, is considered the Torah giant in the Haredi world. Just yesterday, he finally said, unfortunately, after a delay of 2 weeks, it seems that this two-week delay, I'm sorry to say it, probably has or will cause people to lose their lives, unfortunately, because he should have prohibited physical gatherings 2 weeks ago, but better late than never. And he said anybody who gathers in a physical minyan is a rodef, which means you are a murderer, or you're running after to kill somebody. A very, very severe rabbinic term. So absolutely forbidding physical gatherings of a minyan. Only happened yesterday, that being Sunday, March 29th. And now that's it. Now, finally, because he said it, now everyone's listening, with the exception of small extremist groups in Bnei Brak and Mea Shearim. So there are rabbinic voices, but the example of Reb Chaim Kanievsky from Bnei Brak is a great example, that often the voices that we most need to hear from, for whatever reason in the last number of decades, they don't come out when we need to hear them. I don't want to say they don't have the guts to do it, they don't have the courage, but probably the people around them, there's too many henchmen around them, are saying, wait, don't say it now, mm-hmm. it's going to cause...
Or maybe don't even tell them about what's going on in reality.
Correct, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are those voices, mm-hmm. but we need those voices to stand up when we need them to, and not 2 weeks late.
Mm-hmm. Yofi, thanks so much, Avi.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Times of Israel podcast. And a special thanks to TLV1 Studios for production help and to our musical guest, the Diva Family Band. I'm Amanda Borshel-Dan from the Times of Israel. Shalom, and I hope you join us soon.